Sold and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Today, we're going to look at criminal justice reform. We'll hear about solutions to problems like disparate sentencing of convicted criminals and restoration of voting rights to felons who have served their sentences. Later on in the show, we'll take your calls, and the number to call in is 813-239-9663. While you're hearing these, while you're hearing the speeches, you can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can also text 813-433-0885. But first, I want to play a comment that was left by a listener about my last show. One of the topics was a preview of the Lights for Liberty demonstration opposing the human rights abuses of migrants in detention camps along the border and in Homestead, Florida. Some listeners objected to the use of the term concentration camps to describe the concentration of non-criminals into crowded detention camps. Here's one listener's response.
My name is Josh from Clearwater. I would like this on the air. I want to put in my 10 cents in regards, or it's actually not my 10 cents. I'm referencing a journalist, Bo of the Fifth Column. He had a great point on this, on people being triggered by the term concentration camp. Let's not call them concentration camps. Let's just do that, all right? Let's call them Trump concentration camps. Trump wants his name on everything. He shall have it. Like you said in the radio very elegantly, you know, we shouldn't be spending this much time arguing on the definition of words. So let's just add a new word on it, especially from a man who is responsible for all this, and he loves putting his name on everything. Let's make sure his name is on this for the rest of human history. And thank you for all your service to helping our community and with your radio show, and have a great day. Bye.
Well, that was one listener commenting about our last show. It's on our website, WMNF.org. If you want to listen later on in the broadcast, I'll give out the number for you to leave a voicemail about today's show. And you can always listen to previous shows or comment on the stories on our website, WMNF.org is the website. You can also join us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WMNF News. And I want to remind you that you're listening to 88.5 FM, and we're talking today about reforming the state's criminal justice system. And this, the audio that you're going to hear happened 3 days ago at the Tampa Tiger Bay Club. Members asked questions of four local elected officials representing Hillsborough and Pinellas counties. We're going to first hear the four officials and how they define criminal justice reform. Then we'll hear them respond to questions. So the four are Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Chronister, Hillsborough's public defender Julianne Holt, Hillsborough's state attorney Andrew Warren, and state senator Jeff Brandis of Pinellas County. So here they are defining what is criminal justice reform.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Such a pleasure to be here. We're the first responders. We're an individual's initial encounter with the criminal justice system. So we have to be, and we are, the leaders in criminal justice reform. I am so fortunate and so grateful that I have two wonderful criminal justice partners, State Attorney Warren, Madam Public Defender Holt. And I think that not only have done a phenomenal job of accomplishing diversion programs, the diversion programs have been those that are probably the top-notch quality that I've seen looking at the other counties who participate in them. We have to keep our young people out of the criminal justice system. And we've done a phenomenal job at that and tweaked it. So all nonviolent offenders now, we're down to four offenses that aren't eligible for the diversion program. Along the same lines is, why not do it for adults? We've created an adult diversion program. Again, it's worked out phenomenally well. Along the same lines is when you talk about the mental health crisis, you talk about the opioid epidemic and drug addiction. Those individuals need treatment. They don't need incarceration. So do we want to be tough on crime? Yes. And these diversion programs, these quality treatment programs, allow your sheriff's office to focus on those violent offenders that want to victimize our community. That's smart use of resources, what that is. We don't want to be dedicating time to individuals who need to be diverted. So heavily focused on that. Madam Public Defender?
That was Chad Chronister.
Well, for me, criminal justice reform means that we're going to have to make some significant policy changes, and that's going to start in my world. It starts in Tallahassee, where the laws are made. and where policies are set. So for me, I would like to see a significant policy change coming out of Tallahassee where they realize that we need a public health type of approach and model for this state. We need to look at things not in the criminal justice system eyes, but through the eyes of how to improve our communities, how to bring infrastructure to our communities that addresses the true inequities that exist within our community, to address mental health issues, addiction issues, socioeconomic issues, again, from a public health model and from strengthening our communities and strengthening those individuals that can lead us into a better and a more prosperous type of life. Criminal justice reform to me means accepting discretion and not mandatory decisions. For instance, this year, finally, after so many years of saying minimum mandatories are a problem, we had some shifting. Mandatory juvenile direct files had a significant impact here in this community. Finally, this year, the legislature withdrew the mandatory requirement that our state attorney must file certain juvenile offenses into the system. That will make a significant difference in building this community in a better way. So for me, criminal justice reform means that we will look at our community in a holistic manner, look at what our community really needs, and if we can't accomplish that through Tallahassee, everything that the sheriff has said are things that we have put in place here in our community in spite of prohibitions that existed that didn't allow us to do these things, but we did it because we knew it was a better way for our community to move forward and for our children to move forward. So I'm looking forward to a good, prosperous discussion. The other theme was our state attorney has done a wonderful job in acknowledging the inequities of the criminal justice system and has helped us to fix those. And so I want to thank him publicly today.
And that's Julianne Holt, the Hillsborough County Public Defender. This is Andrew Warren, the state attorney.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I ran for state attorney on a bold platform of criminal justice reform. And reform to me is about an idea. It's about the idea that we have to focus on the long-term impact of what we do every day in the system. How do we build a safer community in the long run? How do we reduce crime in the long run? What's the long-term impact of prosecution on a person's family, on the community? Reform is about making sure that we're not only focused on one goal, punishing offenders, but rather we're focused on all the goals of the system: accountability, reducing recidivism, rehabilitating offenders, and standing up for victims. For far too long, we have looked at criminal justice through this narrow prism of arrest, prosecution, and incarceration, rather than thinking more broadly and strategically about how we advance the mission of criminal justice, making our community safer and stronger and healthier while promoting justice and fairness in the system. So in practice, reform is about prioritizing the types of crime that pose the greatest threats to our community. Reform is about steering kids away from the system rather than trapping them in it. Reform is about second chances for first-time offenders. Reform is about thinking differently about how we support our neighbors and loved ones who suffer from mental illness and substance abuse through treatment rather than through arrest and incarceration. Reform is about addressing racial disparities in the system. Reform is about minimizing poverty traps. Reform is about proactive engagement with the community to build transparency and trust. It's about conviction integrity. It's about minimizing poverty traps. It's about making sure we're using data-driven solutions to make sure we're checking on what works rather than just assuming we know what works. And above all, reform is about making sure that prosecutors understand their job is not about seeking convictions, but about seeking justice.
That was State Attorney Andrew Warren. Coming up is Republican State Senator Jeff Brandis.
I feel like it's just say amen and sit down. No, it's really an honor to be with you today. For me, it's really looking at having this conversation about what smart justice is. How do we set up a process in place in Tallahassee at the local level where people are willing to have a conversation about what criminal justice really should look like, what they want their justice system to look for? We always start with this kind of question is, you know, they say, well, we want to talk about criminal justice reform, we want to talk about your prisons. Let's start with a conversation about who we want in prison. How do we separate the people that we're scared of from the people that we're mad at? That is the first portion of the discussion that needs to be had. And then how do we set up a process that consistently lets us look at the data, that consistently lets us look at the research, that we, where we're able to have this conversation in the community and at the state level about what our criminal justice system should look like and what are the best practices that we've gleaned from across the country at dealing with this. The simple truth is, it's true. It's a lot about addiction. A lot of addiction is driving this conversation. It's also a lot about mental health. But at the fundamental level, it's also about broken families. I always tell people, they ask me this conversation, they say, well, if you could just fix one thing in Florida to make state better, what would it be? How do I keep families together? That, if we could figure that out, it would solve so many of these other challenges that we're dealing with. So that's fundamentally, it's about how do we set up a process that's constantly reviewing, constantly refreshing, thinking about best practices, focusing on what is smart justice, what is smart judicial reforms, and how do we be smart on crime just as much as we're talking about being strong on crime. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was State Senator Jeff Brandis, a Republican.
So I do have one more question before we go to the audience, and I'd hope that you could do this as a simple phrase or a simple sentence. What is the one change that still needs to happen?
I'll start on this side, if you don't mind. Well, I think you need consistent leadership at the state level focused on this conversation and a willingness to have a conversation about it. It has been two decades since we've reviewed the criminal punishment code in the state of Florida on an in-depth basis. We have had seven different Department of Corrections heads since I was elected in 2010. There has been no consistent leadership. When there's no consistent leadership, everybody understands we'll just wait out the next guy and we'll move on. And that is pervasive in the criminal justice system. And we need governors and legislatures that are willing to step up and lead on this topic, as much as we need the community to rise up and demand local elected officials think about this process differently.
That was Jeff Brandis.
There is no silver bullet. There's no one solution. I mean, I'm really proud of what we've accomplished with regard to civil citations for juveniles and adults in Hillsborough County to give first-time offenders a second chance, working with our local stakeholders. I'm proud of things we've done in our office to address the criminalization of poverty, especially with regard to driving license suspensions when they're economic-based, based on an ability to pay. But since reform is really about problem-solving thinking, problem-solving approaches, I think two important areas going forward where we're thinking outside the box. One is what we're doing to disarm domestic abusers, to aggressively and consistently enforce the law to take guns out of the hands. And I thank the Sheriff Cronister and the Sheriff's Office for their participation in that. And I think another creative solution we have is with regard to fulfilling the promise of Amendment 4, the rocket docket that we're talking about implementing here. Working with the public defender and other local stakeholders, those are two good examples of how we're thinking outside the box to solve problems in our local system.
Thank you.
That was Andrew Warren.
We need to work hard to not criminalize mental health illness. We need to work hard to not criminalize addiction. And we need to work hard to not use the criminal justice system to solve society's problems, which is what we do right now. And we need to ensure that we don't have law enforcement running the largest mental health institution in the state of Florida. Those changes really need to be made.
Thank you.
That was Julianne Holt.
Senator Brandis alluded to it. The biggest room that I believe for development and improvement when it comes to criminal justice reform is in the detention side of the house, making sure that we're not just warehousing prisoners, making sure they're being equipped with the educational programs that they have. We've expanded those. Vocational training. We feed 4,000 prisoners three times a day. Why not bring instructors in and allow them when they leave, they have a piece of paper. Under development programs building for an electrical contractor, year program now 3 months. When they walk out, they have a piece of paper. Getting them the treatment programs that they need. Madam Public Defender alluded to it. We have more people in our detention facility under psychotropic meds and under treatment than any of the three state mental health facilities. So now we work with the county commissioners like Sandy Merman, who work. We used to give them 3 days medication when they left. Now they get 30 days medication. We're teamed up with an outsider provider, to get them the help that they need to help them continue and prosper. And I just signed the contract this week with an employment agency. When they get out, they work with our caseworkers. Not only do they leave with a gainful employment as they leave.
Beautiful. Thank you all.
That was Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Cronister. Before him, we heard Hillsborough's public defender, Julianne Holt, and Hillsborough State Attorney Andrew Warren, and State Senator Jeff Brandis, a Republican of Pinellas County. And you're listening to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. My name is Sean Canaan, and I'm bringing you this conversation that was recorded at the Tampa Tiger Bay Club on Friday, talking about criminal justice reform. And in the next segment, you'll hear from some of the members that are asking questions about such things as disparate sentencing of convicted criminals. So let's go on to the next section. Again, if you'd like to email in a comment that I can read later in the show, dj@wmnf.org. You can also text 813-433-0885. Later on in the show, I'll open up the phone lines. But here are the four members of the elected officials speaking at Tampa Tiger Bay Club about criminal justice reform and answering questions from members there. You're listening to 88.5 FM.
This is Christina Palin. This question is addressed to Ms. Holt. Ms. Holt, as a result of growing number of complaints from the Black and Hispanic community regarding prosecutors withholding evidence that is favorable to the accused, we have formed a civilian oversight committee talking about Senator Brandis's, addressing Senator Brandis's committee, local citizens rising up. And we're here today. I'm the chair of that committee. Is a civilian oversight committee for prosecutorial misconduct. Mr. Doss is with me. My question is, what is your office doing in response to implementing procedures that actually combat this problem of prosecutors withholding favorable evidence to the accused?
Thank you. So one of the things, and I'll just go ahead and say to Mr. Warren today, as a normal process of our discovery process, we filed demands for discovery immediately upon being appointed. Beginning on probably the 1st of August, and I'll just say this publicly today, we're going to actually file a demand for Brady and Giglio information together with the demand for discovery. So that's going to go out from the very front end. On the other hand, the other thing that I do is internally in my office, we train tremendously in this area that you have to read police reports very carefully, that you have to talk to the officers that are involved in the arrest. You have to talk to the detectives. You have to talk to victims. You have to talk to your client. And your client will tell you a lot about what went on out there. And then you have to pursue those things. So for me, what I'm doing is internally training. We're now going to file demands for Brady and Giglio in every single case, whether it's a felony, a homicide, a misdemeanor, a traffic case. And so from the upfront, that'll be something that we do. We also meet regularly with the heads of all of Mr. Warren's departments in order to discuss how can we better improve the process, because it starts, frankly, with law enforcement, because as the sheriff said, they're the front responders. So we need to know, Mr. Warren needs to know, I need to know everything they know and everything that they have in their possession. Those are all things and improvements that need to be made. I'm very fortunate that the sheriff is willing to meet with us and discuss with that with us, and is also willing to give us broad access to a lot of the information that he has. And so I'll thank him publicly for the improvements that he's doing in the system.
That's Hillsborough's public defender, Julianne Holt.
Lynn Gray, school board member, and I'm going to put my education hat on. I want to also thank Andrew Warren and Julianne Holt and Chad. I don't know the other person as well, but you've been working extensively with the positive behavior intervention system, which really gives our children another way of staying out of the jail, but rather being taken care of before they get to that stage. And I don't know whether people in here know that, but you all work with our Hillsborough County Public Schools. So the question is, what more can we do, you do, to keep our children out of incarceration? Is there anything also that, as a school board member, I can do?
I'll touch on it. Someone else on it. It's the mental health counseling that the kids are getting. You know, let's Baker Act them. Let's lock them up. And I think the school and the school board and school administration's done a wonderful job. It's just getting the counselors that each school needs to make sure that they can properly identify a child that's in need and divert them before law enforcement's called to try to, hey, there's a last resort, let's Baker Act this child. So try to identify it early on and get them the treatment that they need early before, so it can be more preventative.
And to follow up on the sheriff's point, just to throw out a couple numbers for you. From the end of 2016 to the end of 2018, a two-year span, the number of kids being arrested in Hillsborough County, youths under the age of 21, was reduced 19%. During that same period, 2 years, number of kids under the age of 18, so 17 and under, a 58% reduction. 58%. That is huge. And that's not from one program. It's from the civil citation program. It's from the sheriff's efforts to work with us to break the school-to-prison pipeline. It's from all different diversion programs that we have. PBIS has a role in that. There's so many different things that have contributed to that tremendous reduction in putting kids into the system. What do we need to keep doing? We need to keep building on the programs we have. And to the senator's point, we need to strengthen our families. There is no secret to the people that we see coming through the system. There's ties between the criminal justice system and obviously economics and education, socioeconomic factors, and family factors. And by addressing those other avenues, strengthening our economy, improving our schools, strengthening our families, that's how we're going to keep more kids out of the system.
Let me offer you two suggestions. We know that there's a spike in juvenile crime during the summer. What are we doing? What is the school board doing to partner with the sheriff's office and the state's attorneys and the public defenders to have programming in communities during the summers so that kids are engaged? Number two, what is the school board doing to engage kids in the Department of Juvenile Justice that are in this 7 or 8 day window before they're transitioned back out? Because what happens today, what I've seen as I travel around the state is that you go into the Department of Juvenile Justice, everybody says, oh, you're in the system. Well, no, what happens is these kids get released back to their foster home. They leave their foster home. They're back on the streets. They're back in the system. If you go talk to any Department of Juvenile Justice, they'll say, we see the same kids over and over and over sometimes. What are we doing to engage them, to make sure that they're in school, that they're showing up in school? That they're, you know, it's that the truancy is not the issue. So those are the things I think that are two solid recommendations.
And Lynn, I know you already know this. Obviously, the public defender's office entered into an agreement with the school board, and we're going to have a guardian advocate program that we're going to kick off this year for the school system. And why we wanted to do that is because a lot of times, not only do the teachers not understand what they're about to do when they call law enforcement in to intervene into situations, but a lot of times children don't know what their rights are going forward. And so we want them to make intelligent decisions at the front end when they're first talking to law enforcement. We're not there to impede the investigation. What we're there to do is advise the kids and tell them, hey, here's all the options that may be available to you, rather than to be arrested, put in the detention center, and then charged with a criminal offense. And a lot of times, the parents can't be contacted. So when you have an opportunity for a child to have someone to advocate for them, the school's not advocating for them at that point, because obviously they found themselves in a kind of criminal justice type of situation. So by partnering with the school board, I think we're going to see some improvement in the numbers again. The other thing is exactly what the sheriff said. We have got to be careful how we use the mental health system as it relates to juveniles, because that in and of itself is a traumatic experience and causes long-term ramifications in your life. So again, I think that's another area where we can work with the school board.
Connie Burton, community activist. On a national level, we are hearing about resentencing people that have already been sentenced. So that's a national discussion. And for a community that's waiting for some relief, a lot of this sounds like rhetoric. How much political capital are you willing to spend to ensure that we can see justice in our lifetime in terms of recidivism, young black men being caught up in the system disproportionately to white people? Thank you.
I'm assuming that's for me, Connie? Oh, all of us. Okay. Okay. So I'm willing to expend whatever efforts I need to expend. I've spent the last 27 years, as a matter of fact, trying to address the inequities of the system. As you well know, the changes that happened with the death penalty and how the death penalty is used, those were the efforts of the public defender's office, where we finally were able to convince the legislature, because of what the Supreme Court did, that we needed to make a change with juvenile direct files. I have been an advocate to reduce those numbers, and in fact, I don't believe we should have juvenile direct files. I have continued to fight on that avenue. I have bought a program that's called ESIS, where we look at the disparity in sentencings, not only within our own jurisdiction, but compared to the state, statewide. The reason we do that is because what happens in the panhandle is very different than what happens here. I don't see my job as just the public defender for Hillsborough County. I see it as an opportunity to advocate for the inequities that have been building for a long time. I grew up in a day where we didn't have a criminal punishment code or a sentencing guideline. I believe we should give discretions back to the court. And I look forward to the day where we decide that we can entrust advocacy and judges to make the right decisions without these strict guidelines that have disproportionate impact on minorities. And there's no doubt about that.
That's Julianne Holt, the Hillsborough County Public Defender.
Connie, all the things that I was talking about at top that we've been doing over the past 2.5 years have an effect on the community directly, and that's what we're spending our capital on. And the programs we've talked about have a disproportionate effect on low-income Black and brown communities because the criminal justice system has been overly punitive against low-income Black and brown communities for a long time. So when we talk about the decriminalization of poverty and eliminating poverty traps, and our office is making huge differences how we prosecute driving license, suspended license cases, that's an impact. When we talk about direct files, like the public defender said, direct files in Hillsborough County, these are decisions my office makes, down 51% in 2 years. Civil citation programs that we're putting almost 2,000 people a year into with our partners here, that's adults and juveniles, those have tangible impact on the community. But to further the point that the public defender said, this isn't just about creating change here and now in this community. This is about changing the system for the next generation. That's why I ran for state attorney, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Well, State Attorney Andrew Warren.
Our state attorney touched on most of what I would have said. The only thing that I'll add is our efforts in the different communities, especially the inner city, poverty-stricken communities, with our Boys and Girls Club partnership. As short as we are, 181 deputies short, we still have deputies in 7 Boys and Girls Clubs. We helped open up 7 clubs. Over those 6 years, the graduation rates have gone from 42% to 98%. And along the same lines, just as important, 99% of the children who've completed the Boys and Girls Club programs never see the criminal justice system. So it's just staying focused on that, building stronger, smarter children, and have a stronger, safer community.
That's Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Cronister. Before him, we heard Hillsborough State Attorney Andrew Warren, and then Hillsborough Public Defender Julianne Holt. Also on the panel is Republican State Senator Jeff Brandis of Pinellas County. You're listening to a tape of the Tiger Bay Club, Tampa Tiger Bay Club, from last Friday. And they're talking about criminal justice reform and solutions to criminal justice reform. Right now, they're answering questions from members, and we'll get back to that in just a second. I just want to remind you that you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. My name is Sean Canaan. This is Midpoint Monday. If you'd like to email your comments, you can email dj@wmnf.org. You can also text 813-433-0885. Later on in the show, I'll take your phone numbers as well. Well, this next segment starts off with a really interesting response from State Senator Jeff Brandis of Pinellas County, a Republican. He was asked, as you'll hear in a second, you'll hear the question, but I just want you to know that it's a little bit of a change from the exact topic of the whole conversation. But there was someone who asked him about President Trump's comments to what are known as the Squad, the 4 members of Congress, freshman members of Congress. So if you'd like to hear what Republican State Senator Jeff Brandis's response is, give a listen right now. So here is Jeff Brandis answering a question about President Donald Trump's tweets.
Good afternoon, Alma Gonzalez. Thank you so much for being here. Tiger Bay member, my question is for you, Mr. Brandis. The folks who know me know that it would be unusual for me to say thank you for standing up to the NRA and voting for common sense gun control. Thank you. My question is with regard to courage. I have been in the last week dismayed at the fact that the Republican president, Donald Trump, has asked people who look like me to just go home. Would you apologize to communities like mine, and would you ask other members of the GOP to stand with us?
So here's what I'll say. I think that at the end of the day, I don't follow what's going on in D.C. like I follow what's going on here in this community. I'm not watching what all that stuff is. Here's what I'm making sure. You're an American citizen. We should treat you with all the respect that any American citizen deserves. We should apologize to any American citizen that gets offended because we have somebody who calls them out and pretends like they're less of an American citizen. It doesn't matter how you got here, whether you were born here, whether you immigrated here, whether you applied for amnesty and asylum and were granted American citizen. None of that matters. What matters is that you're here. We are a nation of immigrants. My family immigrated from the islands in the 1940s, came here, established a small business, and grew it up. And they have lived the American dream. Every immigrant should have the opportunity to live the American dream. And every president should support citizens of this great country.
There's Republican State Senator Jeff Brandis of Pinellas County.
Thank you for coming today. Darryl Roussan, Senator from District 19. Yay. Each one of you have talked about mental health and substance abuse and its impact on your populations. Connie Burton asked you about willing to put capital behind it. Last year, I asked the legislature for $35 million. They gave me zero. This year, I asked for the same amount of money. They gave me six. Are you willing to support adequate resources for treatment so that those who are afflicted can get help as opposed to incarceration?
Well, Darryl, I'm going to take this one. Commissioner Merman, I hear you're in the audience. I want to thank Commissioner Merman publicly here today because, Darryl, I had a dream, and the dream was to have a forensic behavioral unit in my office. Commissioner Merman assisted me in getting that. I have a robust unit in that office of mine. I had a dream. We were going to have an adult mental health court. Commissioner Merman, I went to her. I now have that. I went to the sheriff's office and said, we need to identify people at the very, very front end with mental health illnesses. Guess what? They partnered with us, and they've done that. I go to Mr. Warren. I say, Mr. Warren, I have another dream. I want a juvenile mental health court. He had the same dream. We now have a juvenile mental health court here in Hillsborough County where our children will get the intervention and the treatment that they need. I went to the place where I could get the resources because guess what? I also asked the legislature to provide me money to do all these things. I got zero also. Commissioner Merman, thank you on behalf of the Public Defender's Office for what you've done.
Hillsborough Public Defender Julianne Holtz.
Senator, I've spent far too much time, more than I would ever want to, holding the hands of mothers and fathers who have lost their kids to overdose, to addiction, to problems in the criminal justice system, and unfortunately, sometimes even ultimately to death. Your question is about whether we would support asking legislature for more money. Right now, we have a band-aid approach to mental health and substance abuse here. We're doing everything we can to find the resources, you know, squeezing blood out of a turnip to do it with our community providers as partners, with our other stakeholders as partners. We're having to solve this problem without being equipped to do it. So your question, will we go and stand and say, yes, we want money from the legislature? My answer is simple. Hell yes.
Hillsborough State Attorney Andrew Warren.
Senator, I'm all in too, but can I get some of that $6 million? But mental health, a lot of people ask the sheriff's office, what's your biggest obstacle moving forward? It's mental health. We now have a mandatory program to make sure every deputy goes through advanced training, 40-hour training. We are in the process of creating a mental health unit to be able to identify those who are they're in the system as repeat, I don't want to say offenders, participants in the Baker Hack program, so we can go back and get them and try to get them the help we need. Working with the county, we got a $750,000 grant to now take the worst of the worst when it comes in terms of mental health and drug treatment and help them re-enter back into society, along with working and using our canteen fund, so it's no taxpayer dollars, using our canteen fund. If they start a mental health program and they get released from jail, we've had some ask if they could stay in jail. I'm like, no, I'm not allowed to do that. But what we do is we, again, use the canteen funds to allow them to continue the treatment that they need, thanks to the county, to get them the help they need, whether it's a day, 3 weeks, or 3 months, continue that help.
That's Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Cronister.
Sorry, he sits on my committee. He gets to advocate every day. We work together on all kinds of things. I think the important thing for you to realize is we have all kinds of challenges inside the Department of Corrections, all kinds of challenges in the counties, all over the place. It isn't just one issue. I have a $40 million lawsuit right now that I have to fund every year for hepatitis C. And somewhere between, in my 100,000 inmates right now, somewhere between 15 and 40% have hep C. It costs me $16,000 to treat an inmate. And because it's a treatment and not a vaccine, what ends up happening is they get hep C again. So we treat them over and over and over again for hep C. We're going to spend another $40 million on mental health, court ordered, another $4 or $5 million on ADA compliance, court ordered. If you look around the state, we have you're 30% more likely in Bay County to go to prison if you have between 22 and 44 points than you are in Miami-Dade. Why? Because they've got no place to divert you to. So they divert you to prison, right? They just send you there. So what we have to do is think about diversion, mental health, addiction, all kinds of things. It is so much bigger than just one area of public policy. It is throughout the system. You go to Lake County today. Lake County CI today had not had an education facility for 5 years because it's been condemned.
Thank you, Senator.
That's Republican State Senator Jeff Brandis of Pinellas County. Before him, we heard Hillsborough Sheriff Chad Cronister. We heard Hillsborough State Attorney Andrew Warren and Hillsborough Public Defender Julianne Holt. And we're listening to them from a speech from a forum that is at Tampa Tiger Bay Club last Friday. My name is Sean Kanaan, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa or WMNF.org. If you'd like to comment on what you're hearing, give us a shout on the email at dj@WMNF.org or text, please sign your name, 813-433-0885. It's 12:43 in the afternoon, and you're listening to 88.5 FM. We're going to continue with more of this forum on criminal justice reform from the Tampa Tiger Bay Club. Let's continue. We have a full show today, so I just want to go to more sound right now. So here are the four elected officials responding to more questions.
I'm Bishop Michelle B. Patty. Just before school ended, I got a call from a parent. Her son was going to be charged with sexual harassment because he swatted a young lady on her buttocks. When we went out to the school and watched the film, things got turned around because the young lady had actually swatted him first. So as we know, when I was in school, it was called horse playing. But now children are being charged. So when these types of cases come to you all, how do y'all see them? How do you view them? And we know once a person is labeled as a sexual offender, that's for life. Nope, they can't live anywhere, can't get a decent job. But in elementary school, they are being, I want to know what their position is on that.
I mean, so that's the type of offense that would be captured under the civil citation program. This is a pre-arrest program to hold kids accountable. And again, we have it for both juveniles and adults now in Hillsborough County. But the idea is a pre-arrest program. So a misdemeanor offense like that, where a citation would be issued at most to put the kid into essentially probation without the formal arrest and prosecution and conviction. But a case like that you're describing, now I don't know all the facts of it, but from the way you describe it, that's the type of case that should be handled in the school system. I would turn to someone on our school board like Ms. Gray and say, is that really a case that should come to the criminal justice system? And she's nodding her head, and I agree with her. And I think I'm seeing my partners up here nod in agreement too. That's the type of case that we should certainly handle outside the criminal context, because there is no long-term value, no long-term benefit to the community in prosecuting that type of offense.
The only thing I would say, though, Michelle, is that if, in fact, a case like that did come through the system, it's one of the things that you know, we have to do as advocates for our clients. And as you have to pick up the phone and you have to call Mr. Warren's office and say, you need to watch this video, because if you didn't watch it before you made the filing decision, you should watch it now. And I can tell you that we do that very routinely. I have Rocky Brancato, my felony bureau chief here. We find cases like that in the system all the time. We'll pick up a phone and we'll call the other side. If they can't work it out at that level, he's on speed dial. And so I'm going to call him, and we're going to talk about it. But I love the fact that you have videos and body cams and things like that. I've represented cases within the school system where it's exactly that. The video is what convinced the state to do the right thing. So a lot of times we say, oh my gosh, everybody's watching everything. Believe it or not, a lot of those videos really help the person who's been charged with the crime.
Ron Weaver, over the last couple of days, I've been concerned whether or not one of the most important issues in the conscience of our state regarding Amendment 4 and returning people to voting who've paid their debts to society, whether or not that judge's recusal was a part of a selection of a judge by the Palm Beach County Supervisor Elections of the best possible lawyer who happened to be in the firm of the wife of the judge involved, such that the judge had to recuse themselves. Is there a current or a future means of making sure that we keep the judges that are selected with respect to these kind of important cases?
Good question. You know, Ron, I'm going to tell you, when I read the story, because I don't know all the facts, but I was concerned, really, lawyers and their reputations, the integrity of that law firm, they knew who the judge was when they accepted that case. To me, that's a problem. I take real issue with what that law firm has done, but I don't know all the facts, so I want to explain that. I think it's important for you to understand that there, all of us here have actually met and talked about Amendment 4. And, you know, to me, one of the questions that I thought we were going to get from Yvonne, I was going to tell you that the most important thing that I thought had happened this year was Amendment 4. And the reason that I say that is because that is a very direct commentary by our community, our statewide community, telling us, the elected leaders, this is what we want. Yes. That is the most significant thing that has happened. And for me, I believe as an elected leader in this community, I need to take a very proactive role in ensuring that what the voters wanted is what in fact is implemented. And I think you're going to see some activity in this area.
Yes, thank you. Any other answers on this? No?
Well, that's convenient because my question also deals with Amendment 4. Rochelle Reback, I'm a member. And this is directed to Mr. Brandis and Andrew Warren. I'm loving what I hear about the possibility of this rocket docket, but I also know that one of the big categories of people who would not be eligible for the rocket docket and not be eligible to have their rights restored are people who owe restitution. Of that group, one of the largest numbers of people are people who've been convicted of felony shoplifting. There was an effort in the legislature this year to raise the amount, the threshold for felony shoplifting. It's not enough. What can we do to increase the threshold for felony shoplifting so that these people could be available? And what are you doing to talk to some of the biggest victims, Target, Walmart, et cetera, to work on their end to relieve people of the burden of that restitution?
Thank you so much.
So two things. One, I supported a $1,500 felony threshold, and that was, so if you look at the radical liberals in Texas, they're at $2,500. And Florida was at $300 and had, right, since the mid-1980s had not changed that number. So while it's not where I wanted to be, it was a significant improvement from where we were, and I think it starts us on a trajectory. Part of that bill, and something that's not talked about, is that every 5 years, there will be an independent study done that looks at this question of felony thresholds. So I think it's important. But I think it's another area where the community working together can ask companies like Walmart, like Target, because one of the provisions of the Amendment 4 statute was that victims can receive forgiveness for restitution. So companies like Publix or Walmart could waive that in the future. And so hopefully the state's attorney is working on that, or maybe asking that question as well, and something you all can work on with those major firms.
You mentioned the rocket docket, and this relates directly to the fines and fees and restitution that's owed. And what we want to make sure when we're fulfilling the voters' will about implementing Amendment 4 is making sure we're doing it in a way that doesn't create two classes of voters, people who can afford the right to vote and people who can't. That's not what the law intends. It's not constitutional. It's not fair. And I'm telling you, it's not going to happen here in Hillsborough County. Because what we're doing is making sure that for those outstanding court costs, which can start at a couple hundred dollars and then skyrocket over time with late fees and administrative expenses, we're setting up this docket with the help of Public Defender's Office, the Supervisor of Elections, the Clerk of the Court, too many agencies to name, to go into the courts, to convert those court costs to community service. Now the community gets a benefit because those monies were never going to be paid. Now the community gets a benefit by the person completing community service. And more importantly, they'll have earned the right to vote back exactly as Amendment 4 promised.
Any other answers?
Good afternoon, Michelle Lambeau. My question is for Mr. Warren. Accountability was mentioned earlier in criminal justice reform, and Florida Statute 918.13 makes it a third degree felony for any person knowing that an investigation is pending or about to be pending to alter, destroy, conceal, or remove any record, document, or thing with the purpose to impair its rarity or availability. So why did the Office of the State Attorney, 13th Judicial Circuit, decide not to prosecute the disgraced, fired ex-officers Landry LaRotta and Algenis Maceo for tampering with physical evidence? And those three officers were known to patrol East Tampa. That was their primary area.
So the case that you're referring to, Michelle, is the case of three officers fired from TPD for essentially not documenting evidence. Now, this was investigated by TPD. And from the time we learned about it, we had our conviction review unit, that specialized unit to identify and review and fix wrongful convictions, look into that. And what we ended up doing was unprecedented. Not only did we dismiss cases that were pending where we had to rely on those officers' testimony, officers who had been discredited, we went back to closed cases. And we ended up vacating, or in the process, going through the courts now to vacate 17 convictions that were in closed cases. Never before happened in Hillsborough County. This is exactly what we should be doing in the criminal justice system. When we have a conviction where we don't have faith and confidence in the integrity of the conviction, going back and looking at them, that's exactly what we did. You had mentioned about prosecuting the officers. The investigation that was conducted by TPD didn't come to evidence that we could have prosecuted them for, but what we were looking at was the convictions that we had already secured to do everything we could, even if the people in those cases were not truly innocent, that is factually innocent, they were procedurally innocent because the process didn't live up to the standards that we require.
Well, that was Hillsborough County State Attorney Andrew Warren. And before him, we heard other elected officials from Pinellas and Hillsborough counties, State Senator Jeff Brandis of Pinellas County, Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Cronister, and Hillsborough Public Defender Julianne Holt. They were speaking Friday at Tampa Tiger Bay Club about criminal justice reform. And if you'd like to comment about this, email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, 88.5 FM or WMNF.org. It's 12:53 in the afternoon. And one of the voices that you did hear asking a question just a few minutes ago was Shelley Reback, one of our hosts on Midpoint Thursday. So let's hear some more sound from this, and we'll come back and we'll take your calls and we'll take your emails at the very end if there's time. So here's the last set of questions that we're going to hear from people talking about, asking questions about criminal justice reform of these elected officials.
Hi, Mindy Murphy, member. My question is, as we work on much needed criminal justice reform, how do we ensure that we don't inadvertently send a message that minimizes the trauma and terror that some victims of crime experience, specifically survivors of domestic violence, because there's often substance misuse allegations, there's often mental health allegations, and sometimes that obscures the fact that domestic violence is a choice made by one person to terrorize and traumatize another person. I am concerned that second chances may reinforce the societal ways in which we often minimize what happens in DV.
I'll take this one again first. Mindy, it's a great question. I mean, the reality is that domestic violence is so hard to prosecute sometimes. Across the country, we have low success rates. We have high declination rates. We have a new supervisor that we put into our DV unit to put everything under the microscope. I've been asking colleagues around the country, how can we do a better job at doing this? How can we do better blocking and tackling in terms of prosecuting DV cases when we know the likelihood that when we're unable to make a case, there's such a high rate of recidivism, and we are just fearing that day when not only that crime is committed again by the same person against the same victim, but God forbid it ends up in a domestic violence homicide, which we have far too many of in Hillsborough County. We worked with the Spring and so many other organizations on our Disarming Domestic Abusers initiative to take guns out of the hands of domestic abusers for all the benefits that that has, protecting the survivors, protecting law enforcement, giving us extra leverage against the abusers. We know that's marginal differences, making a marginal difference. I wish there was that perfect silver bullet solution, but we need to keep doing everything we can to prosecute abusers and protect survivors.
That's Hillsborough State Attorney Andrew Warren.
Joyce Hamilton Henry, ACLU of Florida. Senator Brandis mentioned the Criminal Punishment Code is the single greatest reason for over-incarceration in Florida. What is the legislature's appetite for reviewing or getting rid of the code? Is there any chance of amending the code soon? For everyone else, what are your thoughts and opinions about the code?
Wow. So perfect timing for this answer. So just yesterday, we finally seated all of the members of the Criminal Punishment Review Commission. So if you look at the criminal, if you look at the major legislation that passed this year, a portion of that was that the Attorney General shall establish a Criminal Punishment Code Review Commission. It hasn't been done in decades. That looks across the board and will spend the next, frankly, year working through the Criminal Punishment Code to look at the best practices, to look at where the discrepancies are, to try to figure out why are you much more likely to go to prison in Bay County than you are in Miami-Dade for the exact same crime. And what are the opportunities to really look at the best practices from around the country? So that will kick off in August 15th, and it will probably meet every month up until next June. I hope the ACLU will be involved.
Hi, Tom Scherberger, board member, and I work at the clerk's office. And as you know, the court system is financed on the backs of people who use the system. Most people didn't realize that 90% or more of fines and fees are never paid. Now that's a hurdle to voting. What can be done in the big picture here to deal with the fact that you are using these folks to pay for a court system and they can't afford it, and the court system is underfunded?
Yeah, so also we have right now a study going on fines and fees because we know it's a major problem. Back in 2008, 2009, when the state was running a deficit in so many areas, they jacked up the fees, as you know, on traffic citations. Well, what was the effect? We've seen a radical reduction in traffic citations because when a law enforcement officer comes up to a mom with two kids in the back of the car driving an 84 Toyota Corolla and he's got a $300 ticket he's about to hand her, he all of a sudden writes her a warning. That is just human nature. We need to review top to bottom how the criminal justice system is funded. A lot of the things that State Attorney Warren wants to do as far as the rocket docket and waiving fines and fees, the struggle is many of them are statutory, right? You're not going to waive money into to the Justice Compensation Trust Fund, right? And the perverse incentive that may come from some of these things when all of a sudden local jurisdictions are saying, we need resources. And then the question is, well, you just waived a bunch. So what happens here? So I think the real question is, how do we have a system that works? What are the best practices in the fines and fee space that ultimately will work, that produce the best outcome for justice, for the victims, and for the system overall?
Tom, it's a great question. It actually touches on bigger issues than just about the fines and fees. This is about the criminalization of poverty. The simple reality is that if you live in a low-income neighborhood, you're more likely to end up in the criminal justice system. If you grow up without access to high-quality education, you're more likely to end up in the criminal justice system. If you don't have a strong family support network around you, you're more likely to end up in the criminal justice system. These are macro issues we have to address in the system, and they take the form of the fines and fees, that get piled and piled upon people, including civil fines and fees that translate into criminal violations like driving with a suspended license. It takes an effect in the form of bail and the need for bail reform. Why are we locking up people solely on an inability to make bond when they're not a threat to the community? There are so many issues here to address. And to go back to the senator's point, there's no single policy to do this. We have to take this comprehensive approach about what we want our system to be, who we want to put in jail, how we want to fund it, and how we want to support people who we don't want to be incarcerating, but rather to problem solve the reason why they came into the system in the first place.
Well, that's Hillsborough County State Attorney Andrew Warren. And before him, we heard State Senator Jeff Brandis, a Republican of Pinellas County. We also heard Hillsborough Public Defender Julianne Holt and Hillsborough Sheriff Chad Cronister. They were talking about criminal justice reform at the Tampa Tiger Bay Club on Friday. And if you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, you can please call me at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message next show. And if you missed any of this show, later on in the, I'll have it up on our website that you can watch or listen to it. And that's wmnf.org/news. You can join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. Thanks to our engineers, Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canan. Tomorrow, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday.